Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. And Craig, we are focusing on a post you put out last week on Friday, January 7th. It is your 2022 forecast for markets and metals. You call it Macrocast 2022 Reality Bites. Now, look, we all know how tough it is to forecast year over year, but I think this year it's going to be even harder to forecast because we have some changes that are expected in terms of Fed policy compared to the last couple of years. We have no idea what's going to happen with COVID or any sort of lockdowns. And quite frankly, we also have economic data that is still under debate which way it's going, a lot dealing with inflation data. So, Craig, what are some of the key factors that you are forecasting in this 2022 forecast?
Yeah. Hi, Corey. Hi, Shad. This was a tough one to crank out. I've been doing this. I've had the site for a dozen years, but I've only gotten in the habit of doing this for about the last five or six. And a lot of times it seems pretty straightforward. When we were coming out of 2018 in kind of similar conditions, the 10-year note had gotten to over 3% and everybody thought it was going to 4 or 5 and the Fed was going to keep hiking. I mean, the JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs were talking about 3 or 4 more hikes in 19, but I saw the stock market almost broke and fell 20% in December of 18. And I thought, well, that ain't going to happen. And so there's years like that where it's pretty straightforward and not that complicated. Then there's years like this one where it's like, geez, yeah, some of that macro stuff is the same. But then, geez, you get into politics and societal stuff and geopolitical stuff that's hanging over the markets as well. Whether it's Russia, Ukraine, NATO, China, Taiwan. I mean, there's Iran. So you got all that stuff in there. It's just you end up feeling like you're just throwing darts. And I hope this is at least a little more valuable than that. If we just try to boil it down to those macro factors, and I call it a macro cast because if you get the macro factors right, like interest rates and inflation and real interest rates and the dollar, then you're probably going to get close to getting price right because so much, trading of the futures is done by computer and the computers are following these other markets. And when they decide to buy or sell gold futures as a hedge or as exposure to price or whatever, their thinking is. So you got to get the macro stuff right. So if we can get the macro stuff right here, then at least we're going the right direction. And I do think we're back kind of in a similar place where we were 3 years ago. Just to recap for people that have forgotten, the Fed had been hiking. The 2-year note had risen over a period of a couple of years all the way up to 275. I mean, what are we now? Up to 90? But all the way up to 275, the 10-year note was 3.25, and the stock market basically crashed 20% in about 20 days in late November, early December of 2018. And if you go back and look at a chart like of the TIP ETF as a measure of real interest rates, real interest rates topped then as well. And the Fed didn't actually formalize a policy of rate cuts until June of 19. But already gold had rallied from 1150 to about 1350 in the first 6 months of 19 as people were figuring out, wait a second, maybe the Fed isn't going to be hiking. And then once the Fed formalized that cut, that move toward rate cuts, June of 19 to, early September of 19, we moved all the way, up out of that range that price had been in for 5 or 6 years and made it all the way to, I think, 1560 or 1570, something like that in early September. So it ended up being a pretty good year. And again, it was this anticipation, kind of like people talking about now calling it a policy year, this anticipation that the Fed is so far behind the curve that now that they're going to start reacting to inflation by hiking rates, that what they're actually going to do is invert the yield curve. And then all of a sudden we're going to be talking about cutting rates. And so that's where some of this stuff is similar. I don't know if we'll get, a 30 some odd percent move in gold like we did in 2019 as that was playing out. But I think if we get the macro part right, at least we'll be supportive of prices. And these people that are out there talking about $1,200 gold are going to be, up a creek.
Well, Craig, just as we reflect back on some of your previous forecast, and you did that forecast for 2019, and we were talking before we recorded that you called it 2010 plus 9 at that point in time, because you felt like the back end of the year would be more loaded than the front end of the year. And in this particular year we're moving into, 2022, we do have all those geopolitical influences, but in particular, the Fed policy, those rate hike cycles starting off, you know, they're probably going to squeeze off a couple small ones to start. But by the end of the year, we'll start seeing how is the market reacting to that. Are you looking for something similar this year where the back half of the year is more loaded with news that affects the precious metal cycle?
It could be, you know, and again, it was 2010 plus nine for the year 2019, because the historical reference there was 2010. You know, we had the great financial crisis in 07 and 08. The Fed's response was quantitative easing for the first time ever in March of 2009. But then by the time we got to the end of 2009, the talk was all about, well, that was it. You know, they did their whatever it was, $600 billion worth of QE, but that was a one-time deal. And then they're going to draw down the balance sheet, you know, and it was, you know, it was just an emergency measure. And then by November of 2010, here came QE2, right? I mean, at the time we knew this was a merry-go-round that once you got on it, there was no getting off. And that's exactly how it all played out. Here comes QE2. In anticipation of the slowing of the economy and, you know, Fed trying to remove the stimulus, the metals kind of churned their way sideways through the first half of 2010 and then just exploded. You know, when the facade was dropped and the curtain was pulled back and everyone went, wait a second, the Fed's full of crap. There's no going back. And that's, you know, silver went from, geez, whatever, to 18 to 48 and gold rallied, you know, to all-time highs. Okay, so then what happened? You know, we spent 5 years, everybody believing the Fed again. Oh yeah, the Fed's normalizing the balance sheet and the Fed is going to normalize interest rates. And they spent 5 years doing that until the markets broke and everyone, you know, once again, the curtain is pulled back and everybody realized they're full of crap. Silver goes from, you know, not all the way to 48, but what, 18 to 30, as that was happening, or 14 to 30, maybe, I guess, doubling. Gold went from what, 1050 low, 1150 a couple of times, all the way to 2080. So, you know, not quite doubling in this realization that this was, again, the Fed was full of crap, pulling your leg. Well, okay, here we are again. Everybody believes the Fed. Oh yeah, they're going to, what's the latest now since the Fed minutes came out last week? The Fed's actually going to draw down their balance sheet again. Wait, haven't we heard that before? I mean, seriously, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me three times. And so again, as we move, if I'm right, and it's all, you know, just lies and spin, then by the back half of this year, it's become pretty clear the Fed isn't raising rates. You know, we're not going to see rates go to 5%, and they're not going to draw the balance sheet down from, you know, 9 trillion to 5 trillion back to 1 trillion. That's just impossible. And so as people realize this, the curtain gets pulled back and you see what's going on, probably get another rally. It just kind of would seem that way from based on history.
That is true. The metals can move forward, especially when we get that change of policy, when the Fed can't go through all the tightening and rate hikes that they think. But for the first, let's say, half of this year, however long pressure may still remain on these precious metals, let's start with gold. What are some of your lower targets? Where do you think gold could correct to? Where does it find support?
Well, hey, just for fun, and I don't know if this is just is what it is, and you shouldn't assign much relevance to it, but I'd invite anybody to just pull up a daily chart of gold. Go back 6-9 months, maybe a year or whatever. And on that chart, draw a line at 1680 and see, you know, you see a double bottom there from mid part last year. And draw another, go up $40, draw a line at 1720, and you got a double bottom from last fall. Go up another $40, you got 1760, and that's currently the baseline of support we've had not only the last couple of months, but earlier last year. Go up another $40, you're at 1800. Everybody knows, you know, the battle has been waged back and forth, support resistance at 1800. Go up another $40, you've got that important resistance line from last fall, at, you know, right below 1840, 1836-ish. Go up another $40 where we crapped out back in November at 1880. Go up another $40 and you've got 1920, which is the high from June of last year. Go up another $40. 1960 is where we bought, peaked out at about this time last year when we started the year strong and then the bottom fell out. So, hey, you want something to watch? Watch those $40 levels. And currently, we're kind of waging war, waging a battle between 1760 in 1840, get above 1840, you can make some progress. We're now getting into the point too. Everybody should be very mindful that the February options will expire in 2 weeks. And then the contract's going to go off the board in 2 weeks. You know, it was moving in that latter stages of November into the December expirations that price rolled over from 1880. So short-term traders should probably be mindful of that as well. But watch, you know, just watch those kind of graduated levels, $40 up and down for support or resistance. That'll give you a good idea of the general trend.
Yeah, Craig, it's the 40-40-40-40-40 club. You're right. You every $40 increment, there is this either support level or this resistance level up above. And it'll be interesting to see if we get any of those crazy moves in the early hours that take it down through some of those before options expiry. But I'd like to get your thoughts, since we just had a pretty hot CPI reading out. We had a 7% CPI reading on inflation, and we had a hot PPI reading over 9%. So I'd like to get your thoughts on a lot of the narrative we were hearing earlier in the year was it was going to be transitory. Most people that were thinking clearly realized that was not going to be the case. But we still thought people in the middle of the year could be right, that we were at a high watermark around 5, 6%. But inflation has continued to run hotter and hotter. Do you think it'll eventually de-escalate in the rest of this year? Or do you think we're stuck at these higher levels for the foreseeable future?
Well, the monetary, you know, the cash creation, you know, where you get so much cash chasing a finite amount or a falling amount due to the supply chain number of goods, you know, that's a base inflation cause. But then the other thing we got to keep an eye on is wage inflation, you know, because that adds to the amount of dollars that are out there chasing goods too. And at present, you know, in this great resignation, the big quit, you know, all the stuff that people are talking about, that's one of the ways that employers can attract employees is by, you know, competing on the wage and the salary front. So right now, the last 9 months have seen significant drops in real wages. You know, we talk about real interest rates, which is, you know, your nominal rate of interest minus the inflation rate, your inflation adjusted interest. Well, there's inflation adjusted wages too. I mean, your wages might go up 2% year over year, but if inflation's 8%, I mean, you're able to buy less and less. Your cost of your living is going up. Your quality of living is going down. And so if wages keep going up now or respond to this, then you get this little bit of a, maybe not necessarily a spiral like they say, but certainly increases the pressure. And it's not as if, you know, if inflation, you know, where, you know, something was $3 last year is now $4 because it went up 30%. Well, if it falls down to 20% this year, it's not like you reset to $3 and only go up to $3.60 this year. And now it's 20% on top of the four. So it's not like you're giving it back. So all those things kind of factor in. And I don't know, again, even the Fed admits any rate hikes, you know, Fed funds rate hikes, stuff like that, it takes 6 to 9 months at a minimum to ripple through to really have any impact. And so I think the risk is that you get these inflation expectations entrenched. You know, Powell was always worried about getting deflationary expectations entrenched. We start getting inflationary expectations entrenched. You know, that makes you the negative real rates be more persistent as well. The thing kind of feeds on itself. And so one last thing about the PPI you mentioned here, there were some people trying to celebrate the PPI here on Thursday, only 0.2% month over month. Well, a lot of that was due, you know, crude oil went from 85 to 65 in late November into early December. And so energy component of the producer price index fell, you know, and really restrained the month over month. But now we're back to $82 crude oil. And so PPI could easily just come right back next month. And that, you know, again, it feeds into this notion, again, of perpetuating the inflation expectations. And at the very real level, because if you're a producer and all your input costs are going up, your options are only, you either have to pass that on, if you can, to the consumers, or your margins, you know, get squeezed and go to zero or something. And so I don't think that anything you saw in the data out of December printed here in January should be something that everybody runs up, you know, the flag of victory saying, hey, we conquered the beast. There's a long ways to go before you can feel like inflation's under control.
Oh, yeah. Well, the inflation story, so interesting to see where inflation is going, where it has been, and the impacts or even lack of impacts on some markets. Let's also talk about silver, too, because you include a silver forecast in this document or this report. what are some of the levels in silver that you see this year on the low side, on the high side, and the relationship to gold?
Well, you could normally expect about twice the return in silver, twice the losses in silver based off gold. And since so many of the mining shares and the ETFs kind of match silver, they also get the same kind of relationship out of the shares as well. Remember, silver started this year at like 22. So the bar is pretty low. And if you think, you know, geez, even a 40% move would only get you to about 30. And so silver is likely to stay in this kind of consolidation flag that it's been in now for well over a year, between 22 and 28. You're not going to get real significant upside momentum to get over 25. And right now that's where the 200-day moving average is as well. But you really got to get above 28. You know, some people, I see these people, you know, $40 and $50 silver. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess, you know, anything's possible. But even a move to 40 would be a pretty significant, into the mid-30s would be pretty significant. One of the things I'll watch with keen interest, though, is a lot of the base metals are really cooking again here in January. Copper is well back above 450 and looks like it wants to take another stab up at those all-time highs up near 480, 485. If copper breaks out, it pretty easily could drag silver along with it. And crude oil, you know, people talking about crude oil going to 100. Well, if that happens, that could drag silver along with it too, create a bid. You know, I wrote something late last year called a base case for silver, and that, you know, so many of these base metals, not just copper, but aluminum and zinc and lead, nickel, all of them had big runs at one time or another in 2021. Well, silver's liable to have the same thing happen. You know, stocks of these base metals in London are still very low. So it seems stocks of silver in London are very low too. So anything's, you know, when I'm making this case, you know, anything's possible. But you watch those base metal, industrial metal demand, and you think, well, maybe that could spill over too, independent of what is happening with gold. So silver is probably poised to have a wildly unpredictable and volatile year as well.
Yeah, Craig, I was going to ask you about what you thought about the commodities, but you just kind of laid them out there. But I'll just morph that question into, do you think if we see this combination of inflation and if those other commodities, all the base metals and maybe even silver pulled along with that, do you think there's a point where generalist investors will get interested in the space through one of those doorways in, either through the EV narrative, the maybe silver and base metals narrative, maybe the gold and the financial narrative? What do you think will get generalist investors interested in the resource sector?
Man, that's a big question, isn't it, Chad? You turn on financial TV, and all anybody's focused on or whatever's going up goes up because it goes up and it goes up more. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I just got to own the FANG stocks and some Bitcoin or whatever. And that's where all the action is. And so everybody just keeps piling into just these very narrow and sharply focused themes. So I guess maybe those themes have to flatten out, you know, and people start looking for other things that could work. You know, I don't know if Tesla starts to pull back, you know, and all these other places where people just play the momentum. If you get momentum to begin to slow, then maybe that would help. Outside of that, man, that's the same battle we fought for years. How come more people don't realize what a tiny little market silver is? You know, and even with all of the demand and the whether there's a supply deficit every year between investment demand and industrial demand versus what comes out of the ground and what gets recycled, none of those fundamentals ever seem to matter just because so many people are playing in other sandboxes. So maybe that's what it would take, Chad. But boy, that you touched upon, that's always been one of the eternal questions.
So many people are making money in other sectors.
Yeah.
That's the biggest issue. What about any inner market relationships or outlooks that you have for this year, whether it's the precious metals to something like the U.S. dollar or interest rates or even the U.S. market, as we just alluded to there, many other areas to distract investors. Did you draw any other correlations or recommendations for this year in terms of outlook?
Well, that gets back to that word I made up called macrocast. Because again, in the computer-dominated world, you got to get those factors right. So, for now, You know, we've been watching at my side, we've been watching the dollar index really closely the last 2 or 3 weeks because it's been in a pretty easily defined upward channel ever since the middle of June when the Fed started paying interest on excess reserves. Broke out of that channel the upside in December and then kind of rolled over, tried to find support at the channel, broke down back into the channel, then tried to find support the 50-day. And then once it fell below the 50-day, it became pretty clear that you guys remember on the weekly chart, there's this kind of swing point of 94.65 that was a low in February of 2020. And then it was a high in July later that year. And that seemed that's exactly where it bottomed, frankly, incidentally, on Thursday. So the dollar may remain an uptrend, but there are a lot of folks that think it can make one more higher high before swooning. So if the dollar rolls over later this year, that's going to help. If the bond market continues to be well bid, outside of whether there's QE or not, and nominal rates in the 10-year don't ever exceed 2%, in fact, start falling again toward 1.5% as inflation expectations take hold and all of a sudden negative real rates aren't transitory, they're a permanent fixture. All of those things are going to factor into institutional and hedge fund buying. People want gold exposure. So those are the kind of, those bigger dots that you mentioned there, Corey, that we've got to keep track of. And like I said, in this forecast, you get those right, you're standing on third, getting close to coming all the way home with a successful forecast.
All right, Craig, thank you for really outlining this 2022 macrocast that you released. We will be linking to that below so everybody listening can read over that full report. We'll chat with you next week, and who knows, maybe we'll get some excitement, but it does sound like volatility and maybe a little bit more pain for metals investors as we progress through at least the first half of this year. But again, so much can change because of the fact that so much is changing this year.
Yeah.
Craig, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. Hope you have a great weekend.
All right, guys. All the best.